Yes, good morning. May it please the Court. The district court based
its... Can we get your name for the record, sir?
I beg your pardon. I'm John Weston, appearing for Appellant Dream Palace.
Thank you.
The district court predicated its determination that the appellant was entitled to only limited fees on its erroneous conclusion that appellant had obtained only de minimis relief in the district court, in the proceeding. Ultimately, the court essentially awarded 5% based on that finding of the actual attorney's fees that had been generated below and paid for by the client, and ignored totally the fact that plaintiff or an appellant in its motion for attorney's fees had already made voluntary reductions of approximately 40%, as indicated by Hensley and as sanctioned by this Court in Marino. The Court was simply wrong in its determination that there had been no significant success earned by appellant and, frankly, on that basis, abused its discretion in refusing to award greater fees. I asked the Court to consider three elements of what the success was that were obtained by the appellant. The legislation that was challenged, amongst other things, provided for a new adult entertainment permit. There was no provision for protection for existing businesses during the potentially lengthy administrative and judicial appeal. The district court invalidated that provision and clearly, definitively, and issued judgment in connection with that. Secondly,
I'm not sure what exactly is achieved by that. It means during the pendency of the litigation, you fend off the application of the law. But that suggests benefit in extending litigation, not in winning on a legal issue.
No, not necessarily litigation, Your Honor. What this permitted was the business to be able to remain open while it pursued its appropriate administrative and judicial relief, such that at the end of the day, if it won, the victory it won would not be pyrrhic. It would be real because the business would still be alive as opposed to having been closed.
Well, but at the end of the day, it really didn't win very big and the business didn't close as a result.
It won very big because had it been denied.
Well, it didn't win very big on number one, and we'll get to number two and number three. But number one simply says we stay open while the litigation is pending. When the litigation ended, the business didn't close, so I don't see how there's a big victory here. Maybe numbers two and number three give me something, but number one doesn't give me much at all.
May I follow up on Judge Clifton's comment? I have looked with interest at what I will call Exhibit D, which I believe you folks provided, which discusses in some detail the winning and losing claims and issues set forth in the case. It's clear that you have done a lot, achieved a lot for your client, but as you know, when it comes to the change in position situation, it has to be judicially sanctioned. I'm not sure how many of these claims that you outline in Exhibit D were actually sanctioned by the district court as opposed to something that the county did as a result of the litigation. Does that make any difference under the case law?
Well, it would, Your Honor, to the extent, obviously, that this court and both Your Honor and Judge Smith have been recently active in panels addressing Buchanan and the requirement of a judicial determination.
Indeed we have.
We read them with some assiduousness. But with respect to those points, we prevailed on very specific judicial determinations of invalidity. One with respect to, and under other circumstances, we might debate the significance of point one, but it was a clear hold.
If this would be helpful to me, if you have Exhibit D available, it would be helpful to me for you to refer to which one you're talking about so I can put a little check mark by it as we go down these. You know what I'm talking about. So it's the charts of winning and losing claims and issues. It's roughly three, well, it's 2.5 pages in what appears to be a kind of a table.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. But
starting on those, the winning claims, can you, we go down these quickly, which ones involved court approval and represented a change of position on the part of the county?
The second one, claim for injunction preventing enforcement of adult business licensing requirement.
Mm-hmm. The court did approve that, right?
Yes.
Okay. How about on the next page?
That was the district court.
Right.
The claim for injunction to prevent enforcement of prohibition on presenting performances involving specified sexual activities.
Okay, that's the one on the top of the second page.
Yes, and that was this court. And, of course, this is an erotic dance club, so that the nature of the of what was granted by the Ninth Circuit went to the very essence, the raison d'etre of the performances offered in the business.
I understand. How about the second one on that page?
And then the claim for injunction preventing compelled disclosure of confidential information. That was critical. This court issued an injunction against permitting such disclosure because the permit requirement gave the county lots of private information about the entertainers and the managers.
It was the Court of Appeals that gave its imprimatur.
Yes, this court.
Rather than the district court, right.
Yes, no, this court, Your Honor. But that was critical because they had threatened to leave, and here we would have had a live entertainment business which was not going to be able to entertain entertainers.
How about the third one on that page?
The claim for injunction preventing dancers from having to wear their ID cards, that was granted as to the entertainers by the district court and declared moot by this court in light of this court's enjoining the disclosure of confidential information. In other
that
words,
does conjure up an unusual version of pasties, actually.
It might, but I don't point taken, although I don't think the county intended that to be
pasties.
It had to be worn above the waist, but not in particular areas.
Okay.
And I don't think it was relevant to the managers who were totally clothed to begin with.
I understand. How about the fourth one on that page?
The claim for injunction for preventing managers from having to wear their ID cards, that was declared moot by this court in light of its injunction vis-a-vis the confidentiality provision, but essentially it
so that's tied, from your perspective, that's tied to the second claim on the second page, right?
Indeed. The permit requirement for managers and dancers remained in effect, but the purpose of making that challenge was clearly a related claim under Hensley, in that we attacked the permit requirement because we were concerned about the confidentiality. The permit requirement is what required the providing of the very information which the lack of confidentiality made available to the public. And so it clearly, from our perspective, under Hensley, would have been a related claim.
And what did you seek to accomplish with the permit requirement?
We sought to have the dancer and manager permit requirement invalidated such that, Your Honor,
And you didn't get it invalidated.
What you got was they don't
have to disclose it to the public. Do I understand that right?
What we got was that we did not have to disclose. There was no potential disclosure to the public of the confidential information which was obtained by the county solely through the permit process.
Yes, that's what you got. What you asked for was a complete invalidation of the permit requirement.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
But clearly, Your Honor, with all respect, under Hensley, that the challenge to the permit requirement for purposes of guaranteeing the privacy of the very highly confidential information, address, telephone number, and so forth, was clearly a related claim under Hensley.
Well, related or unrelated, you asked for the moon and the stars, and you wound up getting Cleveland when it comes to the permit, isn't that?
No, not quite. We asked
you wanted the whole thing invalidated.
We asked
and you wound up getting they don't have to disclose it to the public.
Is the river still burning?
Yeah.
We asked to go to the moon either by airplane or by train, and we got there by airplane. And the fact that we sought to get there by train and the court did not allow that does not invalidate, under Hensley, our entitlement to efforts in pursuit of similar relief by different theories. That is the absolute linchpin of what Hensley is, and it was the linchpin of what congressional intent was in adopting 1988, that counsel should be entitled to compensation for reasonable efforts in furtherance of the claims for benefit of the clients.
I see you've got about half a minute left. Did you want to reserve?
I would like to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Scott Boehm, and I am appearing today on behalf of Maricopa County, and I guess technically in defense of Judge McNamee, our presiding judge in Arizona. I think Mr. Weston hit the nail on his head with his presentation, is that the fundamental disagreement between Dream Palace and Maricopa County's position in the district court and this court that Judge McNamee understood and accepted was the degree of success in the trial court.
Let's assume for a second that Judge McNamee thought that they asked for the world and only got a small portion. And as I understand it, what he purported to do then was to only award fees for where they prevailed. What I don't get about Judge McNamee's order is he seems to have disallowed any fees for the time spent in district court on the issues in which they did prevail. He only awarded fees for time spent in the Court of Appeals where they prevailed. Do I have the fact right?
I think, and if I understood you correctly, my understanding from Judge McNamee's ruling is that he took the lodestar figure, and in light of care and your personal opinion in the Cummings case that we cited in our brief, went through the Hensley analysis and started throwing out stuff that they didn't prevail on. And
Did he throw out stuff that they did prevail on ultimately, but he didn't award district court time, but he did award Court of Appeals time?
They suggested that to him.
Asking you if that's what happened.
I don't think he did, Your Honor. I think what Judge McNamee did in that regard was, and this was specifically addressed in the motion to amend, they thought, they being Dream Palace, suggested to Judge McNamee exactly what you're suggesting, mm-hmm. is that, Judge, you may have overlooked the time that we spent in the district court on the two issues that the Ninth Circuit gave us.
If they are right about that, if they are correct about that, then Judge McNamee, as a matter of law, would be wrong. Is that true? He would have no basis to exclude the time they spent in district court on a winning claim.
Well, I think he would have a basis under Hensley. Under Hensley, based upon going through the care factors, he could go through and decide when there is de minimis, and de minimis is my word.
What sense would it make to say, I'll give you the time you spent in the Court of Appeals on these claims, but not the time you spent in the district court on those self-same claims? What sense would that make?
I think that the sense of it is that the district court is allowed to take a look at the overall litigation and determine.
If he says, I'm not going to give you the claims you lost, but if he says, I'll give you the claims you won, but only in the Court of Appeals, not in the district court, I don't understand the logic of that.
I think under Hensley, he gets to make that call. I mean, the judge.
Does he use his trick elbow? Or, I mean, there's got to be some rationale for that. Why would you say, I'll give you your appellate time, but not your district court time?
His explanation in the motion for reconsider, or in the motion to alter or amend, was that he looked at that and decided that in light of everything, of the whole scheme of the time allowed, that he thought that was unreasonable.
But counsel, I mean, let's be realistic about this. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. The county had a lot of political pressure about this particular business and businesses like it. It wanted to put them out of business. These folks indicated, hey, you can't do that constitutionally. They fought tooth and nail to protect their constitutional rights and largely prevailed in the sense that they're able to continue doing business now with some refinements, just like they were doing before, because that was their constitutional right. Why didn't they overwhelmingly prevail in this case?
The reason that, well, first of all, let me disagree with part of your premise there.
Okay.
The county was not intending to put anyone out of business.
Why
not? The county adopted this ordinance in an effort to regulate SOBs, sexually oriented businesses, in order to combat and negate the negative secondary effects that those are universally found to generate. And in so doing that, they adopted, and now I'm starting to.
Okay, but I mean, I appreciate the graciousness of your words, but doesn't that get back to the initial point that I made? The county felt that what these sexual-oriented businesses, which is kind of delicately, the initials on that aren't good, but what they were trying to do was apparently respond to a political outcry of some kind. And they wanted to either eliminate or largely eliminate this threat to the community as they viewed it. Isn't that a fair statement?
Yes. Reduce or eliminate as many negative secondary effects as possible.
So in this case, these folks exercised their constitutional rights. And they said, hey, wait a minute. Under the Constitution, we have certain rights of expression here. We can do certain things. And they fought in the district court, and they fought in the Court of Appeal. And at the end of the day, after all of the Sturm und Drang, they are able to continue to do largely what they did before. And my question to you is, why is that not, from a 1983 perspective, an overwhelming victory?
Because they're not allowed to do largely what they could do before.
Okay, what can't they now do that they were able to do before?
They have to have a permit.
Well, that's a big deal.
They have to have a license.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps people who are not qualified out of the ownership and management of these businesses.
Okay. Money laundering. That doesn't really change the operation of the business in terms of what the customers see, right?
The day-to-day operation of these has changed dramatically mm-hmm. in terms of stage heights, hours of operation,
mm-hmm.
touching of dancers, tipping of dancers, regulation of dancers. You go into these businesses now under the statutes,
mm-hmm.
under the ordinance, it's completely, or I don't know whether it is, it should be completely different in terms of the day-to-day operation.
If the universe was 100%, if everything they wanted was 100%, what did they get out of that 100%?
From this litigation? Uh-huh. By my view, less than 5%.
Less than 5%? Part of the problem is Judge McNamee never quantified it by percentage, did he?
No. What he did is he went through, and I think what he was supposed to do under Hensley and Cummings and I think Benton, the other case from this court that talks about it, is he went through and analyzed what they won and what they lost on an issue or claim basis. Now, keep in mind, Judge McNamee has been on this case since 1997 when it was first filed under the original statute. And I'll agree with you, Judge, the first statute that we passed, or I'd say statute ordinance,
mm-hmm.
was a quick ordinance,
yeah.
pretty much pilfered from the city of Scottsdale's ordinance.
Right.
So after they filed the original complaint, which was the first go-round on this, if you will, that is when we went and completely amended the ordinance and adopted it.
Let's follow up on Judge Silberman's comment. If you take the portion of the case that was won at the Court of Appeals and you include in that the amount of time that was spent at the district court on the same issues that were won at the Court of Appeals, then out of that 100%, then what does it get to be?
I think that was my answer. That gets you to 5.
5%?
They won 4 issues, 4 minor issues.
But understand that you can have something, a gnat on the back of an elephant's back that may be one, and you may have one that's big as the elephant's leg. The reality is that the key issues in this were what they fought over, isn't it? They took up to the Court of Appeals?
The key issues in this were overwhelming defeats. They got their butt kicked, and I'm not patting myself on the back because
you don't use that because we're dealing with an SOB.
No. I'm just saying that Maricopa County came late to the sex regulation business.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time this ordinance was passed and then amended, there were pattern ordinances throughout the country and cases from this court. Colacurcio was one of the first from this court long before we got involved. So neither the plaintiffs nor us, Maricopa County, me personally, who've been defending this from the get-go, reinvented the wheel. All we really had to do was research the cases that this court relied on in its principal ruling and the cases that Judge McNamee relied on. Everything was pretty much cut and dried. There were some issues that the circuits were divided on, but there was very, very little that was novel, that was in frankly any dispute whatsoever.
Well, if that's the case, then why did they have to go to the Court of Appeals? What, was it twice?
Yeah.
And they won both times, right?
No, they didn't win. I mean, they won these two little issues at the Court of Appeals. We didn't cross-appeal the two that Judge McNamee ruled.
Now, from your perspective, what did they win at the Court of Appeals?
They won at the Court of Appeals. The ordinance has a confidentiality clause that says the items or the disclosures made pursuant to this ordinance shall be kept confidential.
Okay, that's a really big deal, isn't it? I mean, if you're talking about workers in the sex trade that maybe don't want their names and their photos and their addresses up on the Internet, that's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
But if you let me finish, I don't mean to be smarty about it, but that was in the ordinance. But then there was a comma that said, subject to the public records laws of Arizona.
That must have been comforting.
I think it was, because, I mean, to Judge McNamee, we explained, we went through the whole Arizona public records law analysis, which the Ninth Circuit didn't get to. So we essentially took that phrase out, put a period where there was a comma. The other thing that they prevailed on in the Ninth Circuit was the definition of specific sexual activities that were precluded under the statute, under the ordinance. Mm-hmm. And it included, you know, such things as excretion on stage, live sex acts, and it also had simulated sex acts. Mm. And the Ninth Circuit said that simulated didn't give them enough of an indication of what was or not prescribed. And I think
it was vague. It was vague, right?
I'm sorry?
It was vague?
No, they didn't really say it was vague. I don't think they decided on vagueness. But for whatever reason, they said, go back and recraft it, because, again, there were a number of other similar statutes upon which the same language had been approved. So we went ahead and did that. That's what they won up here. A comma where there was a period. We already had the confidentiality clause. And we rewrote the statute. I mean, the amendments took a very, very short time. And at the same time, we cured the two defects that Judge McNamee had found. Gave them a temporary permit. And we, I forget what the fourth one was, frankly.
So why don't you wrap up, if you would?
I don't really have anything more, Judge.
Great.
I think,
thank you.
The brief went through it.
Okay. May it please the Court. We would have had no dancers. We would have had no live adult entertainment. As this Court, in its substantive opinion, noted, this is a total ban on nude and semi-nude dancing in everything but name, and indeed the county concedes as much. So this is a regulation that went to the entire heart of what the business was all about, number one. Number two, we would have had no dancers, because although it only took perhaps two words to eliminate it in the ordinance, the lack of confidentiality meant that the home address of every adult entertainer and every management person was available to any citizen who asked for it. So we would have had no dancers, and if somehow there were, they couldn't have done the very dancing which was the raison d'etre of the business. And more importantly, with respect to that, on the license side of things, our client is a licensed nonconforming use. If it had been closed for any tangible period of time, it would have been deemed to have been to abandon the use and would have lost its very, very location. And finally, the point that I would make with respect to this is that we did everything right in this case, as we pointed out in the brief. Before we filed, we came to the county and we said, these are problems. We then had a meeting with them, and we laid it out, and they said, write a letter. I wrote an 18-page letter to them in which I laid out the entirety of what the problems were, including their totally ultra-vires ordinance that they had adopted initially because it was absolutely not sanctioned by the enabling legislation. At no time did the county say, you know, you're right, don't worry about this, we'll fix it. They made us go the limit to it. They made us go for a preliminary injunction, and 2 minutes before we were about to argue the preliminary injunction, even though they knew that they had persuaded the legislature to change the enabling legislation so that the problem would have solved, they finally, at that juncture, they said, okay, we'll stipulate to a preliminary injunction. They made us do everything to fight because the county board of supervisors would never stand up and say, yeah, to an adult business, you were right, we're weak, you're wrong. Now, what this sounds like, what this is like is that the defendant, after being convicted for murder at time of settlement, says, please spare me, I'm an orphan, you must protect me. The county caused virtually all of the time in this case. They called the tune, and now they've got to pay the piper. They cannot have it both ways, as the Court indicated in the previous case.
Thank you.
I didn't want to take your argument time, but I do have one specific question about your brief.
Yes, Judge.
And that is, you requested and obtained special permission from the Court to file an overlong brief up to 21,000 words. You filed a brief which you report is two words short of that. Does that word count include the additional exhibits attached to the brief?
It does not include the exhibits, Your Honor. It's
speaking for myself, I think this brief is in gross violation of the rules.
Well, we apologize if A, firstly,
it didn't need 21,000 words. It didn't need 21,000 words plus a whole lot of exhibits that are really created by you for purposes of argument.
It was not the intention, Your Honor. It was the intention to try to be helpful in a matter where, because of the county's position and the county's failure to object throughout this case to specific expenditures of time, we sought to do our jobs both with respect to the Court and with respect to our client. And if we misunderstood or if we offended the Court, obviously that was not our intention. I thank the Court for its attention.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case argued is submitted.